It's good time. Okay, Commissioner.
All right, good morning, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to our Iron County Commission meeting this Monday, the 10th day of November, 2025. Appreciate your attendance today. We will begin this meeting with an opening prayer offered by Wade, and then Rebecca will lead us in the pledge.
Our gracious, kind, loving Heavenly Father, we come together this day in this commission meeting and we give Thee thanks. We're grateful, Father, for this beautiful land that we live in, for this beautiful community, and we're grateful that we're able to have all the blessings that it bestows upon us, and we're grateful for those that lead and for those that serve this community, and grateful for those who serve and protect us as well. We ask Thee that as we go forth through this meeting that our hearts and minds will be opened and we'll be able to make the correct decisions to best serve our community. Father, we love Thee and we ask for these blessings and do so in the name of Thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We've got minutes to approve, dated October 27th. Is there any discussions on the minutes?
No.
Nope.
I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the minutes from commission meeting October 27th.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then we need to make a motion to pay the bills. Approval of claims for payment from October 27th, 2025 to November 9th, 2025.
I move to approve our claims for payment from October 27th, 2025 to November 9th, 2025.
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Before we go to our reports, I'm going to, if everybody's good with this, we have a visitor from Senator Curtis's office, his staff member, Jeff Razor. And Jeff, what's your official title?
Outreach advisor.
Why don't you come up and just give us a little report? Since you've taken the effort to be here, would you come up to the microphone and maybe we can let you take a minute. Is everybody good with that?
Oh, anytime we can hear it, be enlightened by Jeff. It's a wonderful morning.
Mike, well,
you're
putting
off my report, so yeah, I'm real good with it.
Okay.
It won't replace it.
Oh, okay.
Mike, I didn't know you owned a tie. Okay, that's good.
That's a good Jeff.
Touché.
Only seen him in the police car. Anyway, thank you for letting me take a second. Maybe you've heard in the news that there are steps that we're getting closer to opening up the federal government. Thank goodness. Some of us have been working for free, so this is a good thing that we can do that. So we've kind of haven't traveled as much, so I apologize that I haven't been around as much. But I just wanted to come and say hi and let you know that Senator Curtis sends his best. He's been working pretty hard. We've got a task force, right, that we're trying to get, what is it, Iron and is it Garf? Trying to remember the couple counties that we're trying to get together to meet with a senator online 3-4 times a year. You know, we'd like some people from the community that have a voice that I don't know, we can you can share any questions, any concerns, any priorities, and anyway, so we're trying to do that.
Talking 5 county or just a couple counties?
Just a couple counties. So I cover 11 counties total, and so in those 11 counties, I've got 5 different task forces. Gotcha. They're usually about two counties per task force, and so anyway, we have some efforts there, and I'll contact you as well to see if there's any people that you would appreciate on that task force. So I know it's been a minute since we all ate dinner together with the senator months and months ago, and so thanks for letting me be part of this. I guess I just wanted to kind of hit on services that Senator Curtis's office has available. So in your discussions or in your town meetings or as you talk to people, please remember that these are things that the senator's office can help with. Military and veteran affairs. Love your tie, by the way. Very nice. Healthcare navigation, immigration assistance, post office issues, Social Security, public benefits, IRS and taxpayer advocacy, passports, public land assessment, energy sector concerns and natural resources. So if any of those things come up, please let us know. I'm a phone call away. I live in Richfield, so I'm not too far from here. I'd be more than happy to make a trip. My daughter lives in Cedar, so she would love for me to come through and try to help out in any way I can. So anyway, that's pretty much just kind of what I wanted to share today. Any questions, any concerns, anything?
We appreciate the help back with passports.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. Thank you. Any time, we're here. So
how's it been with the shutdown? Does the senators and House members and representatives still travel back to D.C. like they usually do, or are they?
Not as much. Yeah, not as much. My boss has been back and forth. The House, they've been here for 6 weeks now, and the Senate, not as much. They voted 15 times now over the last 40 days, and so they're in D.C. a lot.
So they did. The Senate did vote to open the government.
Yes.
Well, they had the 60 vote.
60 votes last night. Yes.
Right. And then it goes to the House.
It goes to the House, and then President Trump's got to be on board as well. After
feel
that,
like the House has the votes.
I think so. Yeah. Well, they're the ones that kind of put it out there at the beginning and right, passed it to get to the Senate. So I'm sure hoping that
still maintained.
That's still the case, and people would love to see the government get open back up. In the States, it's kind of been business as usual. The nonprofits and the state have helped out with keeping national parks, open and visitor centers open. And so people may not want it to open. They're going to have to pay to get in the parks again. But,
not going to be able to base jump off El Capitan anymore. Right,
right. We're not cutting down Joshua trees.
My weekend plans.
Make sure you get that in the note. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah. Anything else?
We appreciate you taking some time.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Appreciate you coming.
Yeah, you bet.
And give our best to the senator.
Yeah, we'll do. And no, I'm here. I'm here for anything. If you have grand openings, if you have meetings, if anywhere, I love this county. I never really spent a lot of time in this county until I started in January, and I love the people. You guys have got some wonderful people and some turnover in municipality leaderships, it sounds like, and so I'm excited to start to get to know people. So
okay, thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, John, you're up.
Oh, darn it.
Good morning. I will be brief. In front of you there, I've got my budget printout. There's a couple line items that I'm nervous about. We talked about my travel training budget. It is over, and we'll be asking Luke for an adjustment. We had a $5,000 budget, and we're over by about $600. I don't anticipate any more travel this year, and we increased that for the 2026 year. And then if you look down under elections, postage and shipping is getting close. Some of those numbers we have been able to be reimbursed with through state and federal funds, but we try to keep within the budget that we set at the first of the year. So, and then as far as my report goes, We just finished, we're in the middle of finishing the municipal general election. We'll have our post-election audit tomorrow. We've asked the cities to come and participate, cities and towns to participate in that post-election audit. It went fairly well. I think our biggest question was, why can't I vote in this election? And it was people who were in unincorporated areas that wanted to vote in the city elections. Had some folks that were fairly upset about that. Ultimately, if you don't live in one of the cities, you don't pay taxes to one of the cities, even though you might have a, it might say Cedar City on your postal address. That doesn't mean you're in the incorporated areas. And frankly, it's been moving fast. I mean, the annexation lines, there's been a lot of annexations. We had a chance, Luke, or Nicole, Marcus, and David and I, to visit with the Board of Realtors. We discussed PIDs, the Planned Infrastructure Districts, some of the implications for realtors and for homeowners, people who might be buying. Did you come to that, Sam? Anyway, it was a good discussion. I think it was eye-opening for them. We're going to have some follow-up. Marcus did some good slides. You know, a lot of the things that we talked about were, you know, in a planned infrastructure district, it's a way to get development that might not otherwise be there. I like to say it's a really good thing if you're absolutely desperate for development, which I don't feel like we are, but it is the law of the land, and there are some folks pursuing those. But it also means that if you buy in one of those, your taxes are going to be higher. If that's the – there's a couple different methods they can use. But if they choose to create a levy, which is what a planned infrastructure district allows you to do, then you will have, you know, higher taxes. And I believe Luke had a conversation with a lady. She says, my mom is thinking about buying in one of these, and he kind of explained – how that might work, and they said, oh, maybe we'll look somewhere else. And it was, I think we felt like that was really important to discuss that with the realtors so that they understood kind of the implications of PIDs. There are quite a few coming online, more in Cedar City than in the county right now, but there's also the administrative burden that was going to go with those that is going to fall primarily on recorder and in particular on treasurer. And finally, I'm just grateful for my staff. Everybody's been working hard this election for some of the challenges that and have invariably come up. It went pretty well, and we didn't have too many hiccups. You know, a few little technical things, but you always expect that. I always say that babies and elections come, and you don't get to stop them. You can't hit the pause button on childbirth or elections, and I've had both of those in my family and in my life this month. So, anyway, any questions for me?
Yeah, congratulate.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I'm a new grandpa.
Hey, listen, John has. We need to congratulate John on his viral TikTok.
Oh, that is like the
John.
Funniest thing.
John that's... is John. John's internet famous now.
Is he?
My kids were all sending it to me last night, and they're like, hey, look, John's famous.
I don't understand. Like, that's been out for like 3 years. So I performed a wedding like 4 years ago or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a young couple, and the wife, the bride, was like an internet influencer or something. And so she posted it. They were younger, and she was with child, and it was she made a whole thing about it online, and – like, my family, like, this weekend, like, I don't know why this weekend, but, like, five family members are like, hey, is this you? And I'm like, well, yeah, and that was a while ago. So, yeah.
I have it all. I'll send it to you guys right now.
I'm internet famous.
Maybe we should play it, John.
Oh, you know, the TVs aren't working. I'm going to sit down or maybe skulk away quietly.
Okay, thanks, John.
Thank you.
He didn't even.
I know that's kind of what reminded me when he mentioned the childbirth. I'm like, oh yeah, because that girl was maybe 11 months pregnant.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Let's see, George, you're up. Emergency management.
Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
So my we'll go to my budget first. Everything is well within with variance. Nothing's over. We're looking good. It should be in good shape by the end of the year. So budgetarily, I'm in good shape. Now going to my activities for the last quarter, I won't go over all of them. You've got them there in front of you. I'll hit some of the high points. Sheriff Carpenter, Commissioner Blake, and I met back in September. We were having some EMS problems in the county, and we're meeting with that. We met to discuss some possible solutions. I'm meeting with the state EMS director next week to sit down and discuss some of our problems. It mostly has to do with, I think we're good with Gold Cross. We've got some air ambulance problems that need to be solved for the safety of everybody in the county. So we're going to be addressing those with the state EMS director. We had the state, we had the airport exercise, which, as most of you know, there was an accident at it, and Chief Phillips was burned and has just recently gotten back from the hospital. So we, in the end of September, met with the state about some grant stuff, and that's the feds were still in shutdown, so no funding, no money was forthcoming, and they couldn't give us any answers. The state couldn't give us any answers, so we were kind of at an impasse there. We had Chief Phillips dinner. I actually attended the Summit County LEPC. We had a meeting of all the emergency managers in the state with the Division of Emergency Management earlier. Some problems came up about some special teams that needed to be addressed in statewide. And so I met with Summit County and a lot of their people, and several county emergency managers were involved in that. And so we're looking at the state maybe supporting some special, such as hazmat teams. Statewide, because we don't really have a real robust hazmat response in this area. So between the 9th and the 12th of October, we had a little rain. I don't need to say much more about that. And then on the 28th of October, we all met. All of us met with Representative Snyder to talk about HB 48. And I don't know what your consensus of what your opinion of the call was, but I think it raised more questions than it did answers. Quite frankly, I think everybody's still in the dark about HB 48, and we don't have any rules yet. We don't have a map yet. We don't have really anything. And yet on 1 January, the county's expected to adopt that, and the state will expect us to start collecting fees for HB 48. So I think that's – and we're already on the 10th of November, and we have nothing. So we've got some public meetings coming up. I'm not sure how they're going to address those public meetings because we don't have a map and we don't have rules. So what they're going to tell the public is beyond me. I will be at the public meeting here in Cedar. I'm not sure what's going to be said, but
is it at the Heritage Center?
Yes.
At 1800?
I think so.
Okay. Which is 6 p.m.?
Yes.
What's the date on that again?
November 18th.
Yeah, right. So I'm not really sure what they're going to trot out for the public, but
actually I have 7 to 8. Is that, am I wrong?
It could be. I don't. Yeah. I'm just off the top of my head.
But I was in North Carolina and put some stuff on my phone, and I forget that it's a different time zone on my phone. So I got to check that.
Anyway, I don't know what they're going to say at these public meetings because, quite frankly, they don't have anything to say without rules and without a map and a description or anything. So I think we're all in the dark.
Almost seems like one of those that we've got to pass it so we can figure out what's in it, huh?
Even at that, what assurances are we getting from the insurance companies that it matters to them?
Well, I think that a lot of the insurance – and Representative Snyder spent the first 20 minutes of the call explaining what his vision was, but we knew what his vision was. And I mean, it was nice to have an update, but we knew what the vision was. But the devil's in the details. And I think that all the insurance companies have taken this interim from the time it was passed till 1 January. If they're going to pull out or raise rates, they're doing it. So I think that it was probably self-defeating right out of the – that's my opinion. It was probably self-defeating right out of the gate. So
I was able to verify that meeting is at 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Festival Hall.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's what I had. Yeah. I mean, George, do you see this HB 48 maybe getting punted down the roadway? So to give everybody time, we don't know what we're supposed to do. It's going to be hard to implement it.
Well, it's impossible to implement it if you don't know what the rules are. And probably as importantly as the rules, it's the map describing who's, because that's what's going to drive the inspections later on, is that map. And we don't have a map at all. So
I will say, George, that the assessor's office has gotten that information. So we at least not the map you're talking about, but the parcel information that we had talked about back in September.
Well, and that's great for our purposes, but
we still don't know which parcels.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, we don't know what the state's going to call a, you know, what zone they're going to put any of this in. So without their map, we and the DNR director who was on the call with us said it was being worked on, but I don't think I didn't hear any date of completion. Did any of you? No.
Continually working on it seemed to be the answer.
Continually working on it.
Yeah. It's coming.
And the other thing is the fire district. I got an email from our contractors. They are 75% done. They just needed Canaryville's budget, which I got them that same day. And they needed to have a Zoom call with Wayne Peterson, the fire chief down in Newcastle. So I set that up, and as soon as they get that done, they're going to give us a report.
I really appreciate you taking that on, George.
Yeah.
You want to touch on burn permits, on the issue that we had with that?
So I got a call from Commissioner Cousins. I don't remember what day it was. So a burn permit had been issued to Mr. Hewlett, and he had a crew down there, and they were all standing by, and they called dispatch, and dispatch says, no, you can't burn because of the air quality. Well, so I immediately started calling people and eventually was able to reach Lucas and got it taken off. He called dispatch. The problem is, even if a burn permit is issued on the day of the burning, if they call and the air quality dispatch has, by state law, has the authority to shut it down. And when I talked to DNR in Salt Lake, they informed me that burning was a privilege, not a right. So I'll let you mull that one over. But that's what I was told. So we eventually got it undone. But you all saw the email from Spencer, which followed up a few days later about burning. So that's the rules. Even if you're issued a permit, if the air quality on the day is not good, dispatch has the right to.
Is that a county ordinance or state?
That's rule? A state.
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 That's
law.
A state.
Law.
It seems like if we get down to the wire and these guys need to burn, and the air quality is such that they won't let them, that we should be able to extend that a little bit so they can burn.
Well, I think that's a question that DNR is going to have to answer, and DEQ, and so. So, but I probably feel the same way that most of you feel about it, is that, you know, we put up with a lot of particulates from other fires that are outside of our region, and so I'm not sure why we would necessarily stop somebody from burning just because it was, and it was a difference of 10 feet. I mean, that was basically it, the difference between what was good and what was bad in Mr. Hewlett's case was 10 feet of atmosphere. So it was fairly close.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Have we got that one resolved?
Any answers? All right.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, George.
Let's see, Fleet, Wade.
Good morning. We'll start off with my budget. So it's overall, I'm still under, but there's a couple of line items that we've gone over in. The biggest one would be vehicle operations. That's hard to predict, but also we had that where we had one employee that left and threw us off, so we had to send some up to PVI, so that's putting us over there, but hopefully overall we should have enough in there to cover everything, so we're trying to adjust to that. Our new hire, Jose, he's doing great, hard worker, he's a smart kid, and he's able to do whatever we need him. So
how old is he?
I'm not sure. Younger than me.
You can't ask that.
I'm just curious.
So yeah,
we're hiring young guys or older guys.
A little bit of both.
Jennifer, we can't ask that question anymore.
I would say he's older than 19 and younger than 50. great guy. So. Dave, our main mechanic, he finished an upfit last week. It's been an ongoing one we've been working on for a while just because we've been so busy doing other things, and he finally got it done. But just looking at the parts and the cost of that, so when we send one up to PVI, it was around $28,000. That's what they quoted us to do a full upfit. With the discount on parts that we get for new parts, and then the used parts that we're using, right now we're sitting at about 18. So, and that's just going to get better. So that's a pretty good cost savings, I think, starting out. Talked to you guys about the shop floor and the roof during the budget hearing. John Groom was going to come over and look at that floor. I had Thane come over. He got a hold of John Groom. We'll see if we can maybe do something there where we just cut the old drain out and redo it. That would probably be sufficient for now.
So did you get up and on the roof with a case of silicone yet or not?
Not yet. I'm going to do that before Thursday because
yes, it's a storm coming Friday. So
it's a big flex seal, you know, corner ad at Ace. I don't know. It's on sale, I guess. You can just go get a bunch of cans of that.
Yeah. Spray kind, is that what it is?
Well, they got the spray and the roller kind.
So I need to do that. As far as the inside roof with the insulation falling out, so there's a pretty good span in between each thing. And so as I was looking at it, I think we could maybe get some strapping or something and put in between that, and I think that would probably solve that issue. But I was going to have, what's his name, come over and just look at that you told me to call. I can't remember his name, that does insulation.
Cal
Robinson. Owens.
So some ideas there, but so yeah, those two things. And then me and Lucas met with Enterprise Commercial Fleet again last week and just kind of educated Lucas on well, maybe some of the benefits, some of the non-benefits of doing it. And then we were going to meet again with them, with you guys, and Lucas has that date. He was going to talk to you guys after commission meeting just to see, really look at it and see. I mean, they claim that their turnover is really good on the sale. But that's really would probably be the only benefit, would be the buying power and then the sale prices that they're getting. So I just had another auction place contact me last week. That's a lot like Ritchie Brothers, and so we might even try that route. So the Purple Wave auction that we did those ones on, they seemed a little bit low. Some well-used patrol vehicles that probably wouldn't get much anywhere else. So
on public surplus, are you not hitting the goals that you got? Or
so on public surplus, I tried the Purple Wave because I wanted to try it. I'm going to start putting some more on public surplus to see, because they were doing really good. I just wanted to see if there was another avenue to try it, another option. So we have three snowmobiles on there right now for search and rescue that should do really well. And then we also have a sheriff sale on there right now with three pieces of equipment and a bunch of other stuff. So, which doesn't really benefit us, but the sheriff has to sell it, so it's the easiest route.
So you're doing good. You just wonder if there's a better option.
Yep. Other than that, that's all I have today. You guys have any other questions? Or
so Enterprise, does that look interesting to you?
It does.
Is it?
Mostly just because of the buying power they have.
Is it more buying or selling or both?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. So they buy a million vehicles a year. So they buy right from the manufacturer.
Right.
So
can they do as well or better than state contract?
That's what I'm trying to figure out right now, because they didn't want to give me a price. Mm-hmm. They wanted to just say, well, what's your budget? And we just stretch that out as far as we can. It's like, no, we don't do it like that. So they were supposed to get back to me with some numbers. They were waiting to see what some of the incentives were. I've got numbers back from Young, from Cedar Motor Company, from Ken Garf. So as far as that goes for next year's budget, we'll see. We'll see how they compare, and then see what's our best way to go. So,
but very good.
Hey,
thank you. Wade, appreciate you. All right. Let's see, public defender. Didn't we have Candace?
I can get Candace on the phone.
Oh, okay. I thought she reported recently.
She did. She did in her budget hearing.
Oh, that's
she
right.
And yeah, she had.
I'm getting mixed up with that.
I know. There was so much of that. I can't remember who talked to us there and who's been right here.
She was in court when she was supposed to report last time, and she reported a little bit late. So it feels recent because it was recent.
Got it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. She was. I think she was tied up when she was scheduled.
So you're going to get her on the phone?
Yes, if you want her.
Yeah, let's do it. That'd be great. Oh, did I say? I'm sorry, Jennifer. I skipped you. Why don't you come up right now while he's getting her on the phone? Are you going to be long?
I just texted her and she said she's about ready.
So. Yes, come on. I'm sorry. I overlooked you, so didn't mean to.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. All right, so currently for budget, we ended October at 78.36%, which is well below budget. We do not foresee any anticipated budget issues or concerns for the remainder of this year. And I've got a typo already. Nice. hiring and recruiting since the last HR report on 8/25 of 2025, we have posted, interviewed, and hired 22 positions. So I think that is actually a record for us. It's been pretty busy the past quarter. We have had 10 internal promotions and transfers, and we are currently in the process of recruiting and hiring 4 full-time positions and 1 part-time position. Points of interest, present turnover for 2025 is 15.32%, or 38 positions. In comparison to this time of last year, turnover was at 18.54%, or 46 positions, which equates to about 8 positions lower than the first 10 months of last year. We wrapped up our open enrollment for insurance last week, and it feels like jet lag a little bit because it is nonstop for 5 days straight. I think we did 12-hour days. So I'm just so appreciative to Betsy and Carrie for all the work that they do. It's literally all hands on deck to get everybody signed up. So we pretty much have seen, I think our number was like 140 just by the end of Friday. It's a lot of people. So, but it's good because that's sometimes the only time we see them, which I need to get better on. We've had some milestone anniversaries this quarter, celebrating 10 years, Colby Hewlett in the Rhodes, Lori Neighbors in Justice Court, and Nate Dennett in the Building Department, and celebrating 20 years, Exilda Serrano in the Assessor's Office. So congratulations to them. And that's pretty short and sweet, but if you have any questions for me.
Awesome. That's like short and sweet, but that's a mouthful.
It's a lot. This is our busy season for sure. I think between last week and the end of this year, we put in some pretty good hours. So, yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, good morning. I'm a Jen speaker.
Okay, you're good to go.
Yep. Good morning. How are you guys?
Hi, Candace.
Good.
Good. Thank
good.
You.
Good. For my budget, I don't have any concerns, and I don't anticipate having any issues or going over. The only thing we're processing between now and the end of the year are just some reimbursements for conflict attorneys, and then a few district court expenses. But again, I don't anticipate those going over. We don't have any new hires that we're having to worry about, and the only thing that I have to do between now and the end of the year for employees would be to get some to extend contracts and get those renewed, which I've discussed with Sam. So does anybody have any questions?
No,
I don't think so.
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll plan to report again at the next quarter, and then I'll get on the calendar probably for December for those contract renewals.
Sure. Appreciate you. Thank you very much, Candace.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, USU, you're up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us. Good morning. So what I gave you is basically kind of some of our program highlights and things that we have. That we've done in the past year. I know it's a long time between when we come, so there's a lot of things that we can't talk about here thoroughly. So now as far as our budget, we're doing really well. We don't have any issues there. We're on target for making sure we're good with that. This past year, we have had some movement of people, of personnel. Some of that's due to people leaving us. Deanna, who was our staff assistant, she had left us not too long ago, about a month and a half ago. So we're in search for that. And then also we've had movement as in programs that have changed. After school program, we know we no longer have that. And so that's changed as well. We have Megan Johnson left us last year after a short stint. It took a little bit to replace her with Taryn, who we have now, because of the USU is pretty worried about the federal budget cuts and things. They're worried that maybe if we put somebody in that position, we'd have to let them go or something like that. So it was about 6 months before we had somebody else in there, because of that, because it was ups and downs over and over. But we've got that figured out now. Taryn's with us. She's here today. And then the after-school program was ran by Marla Hoyt, who's with us. So she actually moved from the after-school into our 4-H coordinator position that Taryn had. So we kind of had movement up in the program. So it's a really good thing. We have some good continuity going on in a really good office, I think, right now. But so John actually approved us doing something a little different. We're going to – so to give you kind of a quick highlight from each of our program areas, then we have everybody here, the people over them, that are going to give just a minute or two about it. And that's the stuff that's in front of you. They'll kind of talk about that, and you can ask them questions or whatever. But so – I'm going to turn it over to them and let them give their spiel real quick.
Okay. Hi. So I'm Taryn Walquist, and I'm the new Home and Community faculty member for USU Extension. So before that, I was the 4-H coordinator, and so I moved into this position this summer. So I'm still kind of getting my feet under me, but in the packet, you'll see a few of the programs that are in the works. So I'm working with some colleagues on a civil dialogue program where we help the community learn how to have civil, respectful conversations about challenging topics, which I know we don't have any of those to talk about right now. So,
no issues there.
Yeah. So that's a program that's in the works. And then another thing, another program that I'm working on is my predecessor, when she did a needs assessment of the community, she found that the top need was to address youth mental health. So I've got a couple things in the works there, going to be setting up some screen-free community initiatives for families, and then also working on a parent education program to help them know how to help them recognize the dangers of a phone-based childhood versus a live in real life childhood, and then help them, you know, learn how to set boundaries and guide their kids through that important time of adolescence, where the phone has the potential to have the most negative impact on their mental health. And so that's in the works. And then continuing the tradition of food preservation, we'll do some canning workshops next year, maybe bring Master Food Preserver to the community. So those are the things that are in the works in Home and Community. Any questions for me?
Sounds okay. Great.
Oh, right. That's awesome.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Rebecca Iverson now. And I have a lot, so I'm going to just run through it. I was trying to just do the most interesting ones, but I think almost everything I do is interesting. But we'll start with the Utah-Arizona workshop. We had over 560 people come. We were able to get Temple Grandin to come down and speak, which was awesome. And she actually donated her time because she thought it was so worthwhile. So that was kind of cool. Our Cattlemen's Reproduction Workshop, we had 74 people with over 300,000 in value of knowledge. And so this is what our main purpose is to help producers do best practices, which in turn is the best for our soil and land, but also the best for your business, because that's what agriculture is. On-farm sensors throughout the county, we have probably 10 water moisture sensors to help with your irrigation, how much holding capacity, and try and minimize the water use, but also make sure you're getting the maximum product. Our gopher abatement program, you guys help sponsor. We have given out over 30 traps. No one has brought me any tails yet, so I don't know if they're just taking them home and they're just too grossed out to cut them off. I don't know, but we're happy they're being used. We've done a lot with 4-H, our farm camp.
You have a bounty for the tails?
Yeah.
Yes.
What is the bounty?
So we have $3 on certain, like, general overall, and then if you go to certain farms, like Hunter Farms, they will pay $6 a tail.
Wow.
They have to be under 18 to do it. Well, the kids, not the gophers. So
to hit up Brandon and see what he's paid out, if he's paid out anything.
I know. Well, and we haven't paid out anything, and we've given out tons of traps. So we're going to work on that again next year and probably do a training session, and then I'll probably do certain days in Parowan and Newcastle.
What's a bigger problem, gophers or prey dogs?
I'm not allowed to talk about prey dogs.
Not.
Prey dogs are a big problem, but there's nothing we can do because they are endangered.
Well, I get it, but I'm just wondering what's the...
Gophers are smaller,
right,
and so their hills are smaller. Prairie dogs, when they dig a hole, it's a huge hole. Right. So they cause a lot of damage.
Economically, it's prairie dogs.
What?
Economically, it's prairie dogs. There's a lot more control used on gophers, but...
There you go. Yeah, Ken probably knows more about that than I do. And then research-wise, we're doing a virtual fencing research, which is actually where I'm going to run to today. We're analyzing, have you guys heard of that? They have shock collars on cows. And then we're analyzing the overall health of the cow also, because they found over a 30 percent pound difference in cows that have those on versus cows that don't, which if you're keeping your cows, it's not that big a deal. But if you, but it is concerning to see how much it affects them. We have a native seed production where you can plant in pivot corners.
Okay, say that again.
Go back, yeah.
I missed that. So what?
30 pounds for the collared cows or the uncollared cows?
The collared cows are rating 30 pounds less than the uncollared cows.
Why is that?
Because they're restricting their movement.
Yeah, so it shocks them, and they're only allowed to go in a certain area. And a lot of people, some people, are trying to do high-intensive grazing with the shock collars. And so they say that stress is causing those cows not to be as feed efficient and not able to eat as much because they're worried about getting shocked.
Yeah. Concept and theory in the Midwest, it's great. In the Intermountain West, I'm not a fan yet. I've got neighbors I talked to last week. We gathered and worked our cows last week, and he said, yeah, good luck getting that cow through a gate that's been shocked by going next to that fence. Mm. You're not getting them within 100 yards of those fences.
Mm. Yeah. So it's really effective, but there's the downsides we're starting to see now.
Are you required to put?
No. This is just a...
On Monroe Mountain, they're actually starting to require them to graze on Forest Service. So down here, we're not. But on Monroe, they're asking for that. And that's our concern, is if that does happen, not only you will be forced to pay. So you pay like $1,500 for a tower, a monthly subscription fee, as well as batteries. And so we're with virtual fence company Vents, and we pay $10 a battery, and we're going to have to change them out about every 3 months.
Gee.
So it's really concerning.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, and there's different ones, but there's this is a whole big issue, and if you want to dive off into it, we can, but...
Probably another day.
Probably another day. We also did at our county fair, which includes the livestock show, in case... It's kind of hard because it's in Cedar, but they're still tied together, and we give out an Iron County buckle as well. We had 374 lambs, 127 goats, 119 hogs, 54 beef, and 44 peewees, which were able to come. These were just what was registered, so that could be multiple kids showing two animals. But we had a really good show, and before that we had a pre-show, which was put on with the help of us, but mostly it was ran by the high schoolers, because we wanted to give them an opportunity to teach their youth. And they did an excellent job. It was super fun. And we had over 50 people there. And we're planning on even bigger next year. In your packets, we also have a soil health field day coming up. If you guys would like to come, you're more than welcome. And, yeah, do you guys have any questions?
Great information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shut up. Let's see. We're off to the commission.
We still got more.
We got one more. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I'm Marla Hoyt. I'm the new 4-H program coordinator. As you can see in the packet, we have close to 800 kids that were registered for 4-H last year. We had 25 clubs running. We had 20 camps during the summer. Just to highlight some of them, we do have Lego robotics, but we have a robotics team with high school kids, middle school and high school kids that went to Canada. They won the state competition and fundraised and got to go to the Worlds. And they did pretty well there. Awesome. Like Rebecca said, we had a pretty good showing for livestock. We did some clinics to help them get ready for it. We have interest in small animals, and we're working on trying to get more involvement there. We had a little rabbit show at the fair, so we'd like to see more animals, but it's taking some time. So I think we're off to a good start. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I went and visited those guys at the fair, and the robotics kids.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I didn't know that was something that you guys did, but those kids were really enthusiastic.
They're really into that.
They are, and they're great.
Yeah. Oh, they were really excited about it. That was cool.
I just want to let Jamie come up here and talk just for a second. Introduce yourself.
I'm Jamie Anderson. I work as a staff and programs assistant. I pretty much just do a little bit of everything in helping everyone with their programs and keeping the office running. Thanks.
Nice to meet you.
On my Hort side, it's in there, but you see we did a lot of stuff at the fair. It was pretty fun to do. I work with master gardeners. I work with junior master gardener now with kids. I do it. I don't know if you've ever seen that little garden behind the Frontier Homestead Park, the little dirt spot right there. I don't know if you saw it this year. Now, there's a before and after picture I put in there. They actually give that spot to us so we can actually run my program through there. We use our schoolhouse to teach the kids, and we go out there and we actually plant, do a demonstration garden for them and stuff. And the picture on there is one kid that was loving it, even though he likes all the big, ugly squash, but he took all those home, and he was happy to have them. So that kind of thing. But, yeah, just thank you. We appreciate all your support and stuff for us at Extension. We love doing what we do. Big part of the county, and appreciate it. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Good report. All right, Commissioner Blake, you want to go?
Yeah, I've just got I did a lot of stuff, but I'll just share a few things this morning. We already talked about our meeting with Representative Snyder, that public meeting that's November 18th from 7 to 8:30 at the Heritage Center. I think is important. I don't know how they've advertised that. Not sure, but
I've seen it on social media.
Will it be broadcast? I'm going to be out of town.
I don't know.
I don't know.
No idea. I met with representatives from UAC and MIDA, and I can't remember what MIDA stands for. It's basically, it's a military
installation development authority. So that will be online.
It will be.
Yeah.
So that was their, I guess they would be sort of comparable to the Utah and LaPorte Authority. They have a group that's looking to go through them for kind of a major energy project here. In order for us to engage with them, we need to do a resolution saying that we'll just engage with them. That doesn't commit us to anything. We actually had that on the agenda, and then we pulled it from the agenda, not quite to that stage yet. But that's going to be forthcoming. There's going to be a lot to that. But I met with them and indicated that we would at least do the resolution to open the door to speak with them and kind of figure that out. But that's what that is. I met with the CJC advisory board this week. The focus there is looking at these group home statistics. You know, the sheriff talks about it when he was here. Sheriff was there, chiefs of police from other areas, the hospital, juvenile probation and corrections. This is becoming such a huge issue. And I don't know that it's something that can be dealt with on the state level. It may be something that we have to deal with here on the county level to actually give some teeth moving forward. We're still in the process of collecting some data and asked for some more data to be collected. And then I'm going to work with Nick Hewlett, our director at the CJC, and be kind of the clearinghouse for that. But that's going to be something ongoing that we'll see come up.
So all those incidents will either end up there or through the sheriff's department, right? Is that correct?
Well, no, the sheriff's office, because most of those facilities are in the county, the sheriff's office takes the brunt of them.
There's some in the
city. There's some in every. Okay. We have one in Parowan. We have Enoch. We have Cedar City. Like, everybody's affected by it. The sheriff more, just because of, you know, the volume of those programs here in the unincorporated Iron County.
Chrysalis more in the cities.
Yeah, Chrysalis probably more in the cities, but there are some others. The hospital is really being overrun, the emergency department, juvenile probation is being overrun, the courts are being overrun. It's you know, it's a systemic problem much larger than just with the sheriff's department. And so we're going to approach that as a multidisciplinary team to figure out hopefully some kind of fix to that. We kind of bragged a little bit in our meeting. We're like, you know, we've got one in Parham, but we haven't had any problems really. And then Saturday night, Friday night, whichever night it was, the exact scenario that we talked about being such a problem arose here in Parham, and I had to deal with that and apologize profusely to the hospital because there was no other options. But that's something that we'll talk about moving forward once we gather some of that data, and we've got, you know, a number of people working on that, so that'll be a good thing. Met with Gold Cross Ambulance, just some logistics with coverage. They've got some new supervisors there that weren't familiar with our operating agreement with the county. They're kind of operating outside of that. We've begun to address that. We actually saw some policy change within 24 hours with them that I think we're moving in the right direction. I met with Chief Barton at Paragon of Fire, just talking about some mutual aid issues and response in the county, some equipment needs, and just trying to figure out how to kind of make some of those things moving forward. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
Some other issues that are ongoing, but not to talk about here. So,
Mr. Robinson.
We've already talked about a lot of the things that I participated in. One thing that a couple events that I went to, one was the I don't know if it you would call it the ribbon cutting or whatever for the 4 million gallon tank out on the west side of Cedar City.
Oh, I'm glad you talked about that because I didn't have it in my calendar, so I forgot. But yeah. I've got some really cool video maybe. Yeah. I'll share later.
So a 4 million gallon tank that Phase has just completed that will be part of the water system in Cedar City area. They lowered a grand piano or a baby grand into it with a crane, sang some songs. The acoustics were pretty cool. They'll have, I don't know, was there 80 people in there?
Yeah.
And they sang the national anthem and a couple of patriotic songs. So that was pretty neat to be part of, and now they'll clean it up and get it filled with 4 million gallons of water. Also attended a meeting for Cross Hollow Event Center, the addition that's going on there, and some scheduling or some rate increases that they're going to do there for the public. He's got that to the point of capacity. To where he's going to start shutting down one-day events that will have to cede preference to 2-, 3-, 4-day events because there's something in there almost every single weekend. I think there was 2 weekends coming up in 2026 that he didn't have an event for. So it's being used tremendously.
He's doing an amazing job.
Oh, it's cool to see. And so with the addition that's going on at that facility, it's going to be really, really nice. Had the Iron County Council of Government meeting. A lot of good topics were discussed there. Parowan, Mayor Haldeman announced that both service stations, they're not even service stations anymore, but Terrible's and Maverick both had their final inspections, so they're going to open. Terrible's is open. Okay. The bridge is going to be taken here soon. But there's a lot of projects going on throughout the county, and it's good to meet with UDOT and see those and see what's coming up. So that's about it.
Thank you.
Oh, the jail meeting also. They had a mock-up of one of the tilt panels and the coloring on that, and they were going to sandblast that so we could kind of get a look at that and see what it looks like.
Thank you. I went down last Sunday morning when I had a couple hours before church and looked around for little bit. It's coming along, the jail. I had meetings with Layton week before last on a lot of different change orders and a lot of paperwork stuff. A couple hours
we had, and a lot of the stuff that I've wanted to talk about has been covered. I'm sorry to miss the tank thing. I was out of town. I couldn't make that. But the I had a meeting last week with dealing with this Lund and Modena water systems. Union Pacific is deeding over the two wells that Lund. There's just several residents in each community that uses that water. And I've talked about this before, but Union Pacific is decommissioning a lot of the wells they have along the railways that they used to use for their steam engines. And so they want to kind of get out of the water business. So they've been really great to work with. I was on a Zoom call with two representatives from Union Pacific, Justin Waymont, who represents the residents in Lund. And then we had Rich Wilson, our engineer, on there. And we discussed, Rich was going to go out and do a rough survey of the water system in Lund so that they could deed some of that over. So we're in the process of working on that so that those people don't. There's only, I think, six homes in Lund that uses that water, but it would be devastating for them to lose their water source. And so Union Pacific has been really stellar on helping with that and being willing to donate their well and even some water rights, which has been very gracious on their part, I think. Just reading the news, I just wanted to mention, too, it was awesome to see that the President Trump is dealing with the Big Four, Big Three packers with the beef industry.
Big Four,
and kind of investigating some of the things that's been going on there for years that haven't been fair, in my opinion. And hopefully the lamb and sheep producers, that continues on. But I think those things are finally getting some attention. And that kudos to a lot of people in Iron County for bringing that to the attention of a lot of different people in the government, that there needs to be some attention. I think that's a really serious issue for our country, to be able to feed our people with our protein. And some cry foul with tariffs and things, but we've got to have a level playing field and have it fair. And I'm glad to see that the administration is addressing some of those concerns. We have the HBA. I'll be at the Heritage Center on the 18th. I'll be attending that meeting. But that's all I have. It's 5 after. Let's take a 10-minute break, and we'll resume this meeting at 10:15. Thank you very much. So John, you're okay with, I mean, we're okay doing the public, we have to do the public hearing first, right?
Yeah, only because that's time specific.
Right,
yeah.
But then public comments, do we want to do that too? I mean, usually there's nothing much, or do you want to move that?
Yeah, and I don't even see anybody
here that would.
I don't either.
So I think you're probably safe to just go right in order.
Okay, all right.
I mean, you could if you wanted to bump the public comments, but.
I don't. Okay. Ready?
Sorry.
Did you get it fixed?
Yes, but I just want to verify that it's streaming and it's locking up on me. I ran into Brad at Ace. You see him. No, it's fine. I just wondered if you could see the stream.
Yeah, I'm on. Yeah.
Okay, because mine locked up. Oh, okay.
So yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sweet. All right, Commissioner, go ahead.
Hey, I think our technology is working, so we'll move forward. I'd like to welcome those that have joined us in for our 10 o'clock meeting. We will go to, and Mayor and Sam, we know that you and others want to speak on item number 3. We should get there quickly. We'll start off with a public hearing, discussion, and possible approval of a proposed general plan amendment, Ordinance 2025-12, amending the Iron County General Plan to include a water use and preservation element in accordance with Utah Senate Bill 110. And Brett, you're going to cover that for us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
So I guess just to start off as kind of an overarching theme that we'll mention that I want, you know, to kind of be remembered and carried through with this item is just the purpose of the general plan. So obviously general plan amendment. The general plan is an advisory guide for land use decisions. It kind of describes where we are, where we want to be, and how we're going to get there. And most importantly, it does not create regulations or requirements, but may recommend new policies or strategies. So I just wanted to kind of highlight that to point out that anything that we, you know, have in this draft water use and preservation element, it's really more of a, you know, recommendation. And if it ends up being that new policies come out of it down the line, great. But that's not the intent of what this draft element is doing. It's not trying to create new policies. So I guess then getting into, you know, why are we even bringing this forward? So there was basically in Utah Code 1727A403 basically says that all counties in Utah are required to have a water use and preservation element. So if they didn't already have one before, then they would need to create one. So obviously our general plan has water use aspects to it, but it does not have the aspects in here that they're specifically looking for. So you can see there's four main criteria that they want this element to address. First, what is the effect of permitted development on water demand and infrastructure? So basically, what is the water demand today? What is needed for the county? Second, what are methods for reducing water demand on existing development that's already in place? Third, what is methods for reducing water demand for future development? And then lastly, you know, are there opportunities to modify operations to eliminate or reduce conditions that waste water? And that's specifically, I think, talking about different county operations and different things that we could potentially do. So I'll highlight a couple of those things here quickly. But just as a general overview for water, we've essentially, you know, the county is not in the water business. You know, we are not controlling or regulating water in any way. You know, we've got the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District that's pretty important. They, just based on where they're located, they serve whether through direct service or through wholesale or retail, they're serving about 90% of the county's population. So they're kind of a main driver for us in the county, I think, when it comes to different conservation efforts and whatnot. So we'll see in a few slides some of the things that, you know, we could potentially mirror. And then, of course, you've got all the municipal providers that provide, you know, Cedar, Enoch, Parowan, Brian Head, you know, are all those municipal providers for their residents. And then different culinary water providers within the county, and then, of course, private wells that people utilize. So within Iron County, we are primarily within the Cedar Beaver watershed. And then just jumping in, so obviously you're probably very familiar with the three different groundwater management plans that we have within the county, Cedar Valley, Parowan Valley, Escalante Valley. So that's what that first top graph is just showing. It just shows, based on those groundwater management plans, what the safe yield for each of those valleys is. And again, these numbers are all in acre feet. And then it indicates what the average annual withdrawal is. And then when those groundwater management plans were approved, and then when they would potentially be implemented if withdrawals, you know, aren't reduced. So that's that top graph. And then the lower graph just shows, on the very left, you'll see it just shows all the years from 1989 to 2023, what the average withdrawal was, and then it goes through and shows five-year averages. So for the most part, generally remains a little bit flat, but there's definitely some of the areas in the valleys where, you know, water use continues to increase and grow. So as was mentioned, you know, on that previous slide, it showed the implementation date. So the implementation would essentially mean curtailment or essentially like a pause on groundwater pumping in order to reduce groundwater withdrawal to back to that number that they indicated with that safe yield. And then this just shows all the different maps of where each of the valleys are located. So generally speaking, Cedar and Parowan are completely within the county. Escalante Valley is the only one that does extend a little bit beyond the boundaries of the county. We get up into to Beaver County to the north, as well as down into Washington County to include, you know, like Enterprise and some of those areas as well. So that groundwater management plan does include areas outside of the county as well. And then as part of, again, in order to determine what future demand is going to be as required by the law, we kind of look at population projections. Now, there's a lot of different ways you can do population projections. So what we ended up just utilizing for this draft element was using the Kempsey-Gardner Policy Institute. And that shows that by 2060, so in the next 35 years, potential growth of about 28,000 additional residents, you know, about hovering around 98,000. So the way that they do those calculations, those projections, is they've got kind of a low estimate, kind of a baseline, middle of the road estimate, and then a high estimate. So this is based on kind of that baseline, middle of the road. We're not necessarily looking at the absolute worst case scenario, and we're also not, you know, trying to underestimate or just take the least, you know. So we just took that middle of the road approach for this purpose here, and that just again kind of shows the increase in M&I demand, so municipal and industrial. So that's basically all the domestic water use. It does not include any of the agricultural water use there. And then again, so conservation efforts for existing development. You know, we kind of looked a lot and coordinate a lot with Central Allen County Water Conservancy District to look at and potentially replicate some of the successes that they've had. So some of the things that they've been able to do is apply for a lot of different grants to get different rebates, whether that be for, you know, reducing or eliminating turf, you know, installing smart controllers, different, you know, low flow toilets, all that kind of stuff. Working on doing audits, providing education. They've got a tiered pricing structure. And then with agricultural, the LEPA and LISA sprinklers, you know, that provides additional savings, soil sensors. And then, of course, you know, they've got currently seven different recharge projects just within the Cedar Valley. And then, of course, we've got the Parowan recharge project, you know, currently under construction as well. So those recharge projects, I wanted to specifically highlight those just because you know, that's, I think, a big effort on trying to get to that safe yield that those groundwater management plans have. You know, for water that would have otherwise been lost, evaporated, and just gone, and we have to still account for it because it's lost, the groundwater recharge really helps pump it back in and to some extent reduces our usable amount.
In 20, I think it was 21 and 22, or 22, 22, I can't remember. There was 2 years there that we recharged. We put 3 billion gallons in the ground. And if you do the math, it was enough water to provide about 20,000 homes with water. So it was, you know, the years that you have extra water, it's awesome to have those in place. And now we've got them, so it's good. And Parowan's, it's exciting to see the project moving forward.
Yep.
In our plan, are we able to get credit for the recharge in terms of?
Yes.
Yep.
It moves the goalpost down. It moves it down as you, and they've got SCADA on all of them, measuring in real time how much water's going in. The one by the key maker on 56, there's water going in and water going out. So they've got a measurement on the one going in and one going out, and then they take the whatever goes in. Yeah. But they measure those real time, and that we get credit for that. So from the state. So.
Yep. Yeah, so that's why I wanted to definitely highlight those, because I think the county, you know, as is noted here, since, you know, 1995, Cedar Valley's had an 18% reduction, you know, in water use, which ranked us across the state as fourth in low water usage. So I think we're continuing to try and be kind of a leader in that regards as far as, you know, doing these recharge projects. You know, we could just kind of ignore it, which I don't think would be good. And so I think we've definitely kind of taken some initiative to move things forward on that. I wonder if I skipped one here. Nope, okay. All right, so then we'll jump into kind of some of the strategies that are listed for future development. So that could include, you know, potentially encouraging different subdivisions to do water budgets, you know, to kind of look at that just a little bit closer. I highlighted that second bullet point. That's something that's already a county ordinance, and that's to require that new subdivisions have to demonstrate a 50-year-old water right. So they can't just come in with kind of new water rights that are only going to, you know, be available for 20, 30 years. They've got to do at least, you know, have an older water right available in order to allow that subdivision to happen. And then promote low-impact development or permeable surfaces. And again, that plays into enhancing the recharge efforts that we have. With the zoning codes, we could potentially look at turf limits, you know, like the Water Conservancy District has, and, you know, maybe apply those countywide. Looking at building codes, you know, continue to support water efficient fixture standards, which I was talking to Terry, and we kind of do a lot of that already. So it's just, I think, including those here, those things that we're doing, but also things that we could continue doing.
Just to interject, when I was on the water board years ago, we introduced, I think it's, 0.45, I think they have to bring to the table for a home. And we, you know, if they came in with a zero-scape plan with minimal grass, it reduced that tremendously to where a whole subdivision could bring in, what was it, 0.28 or something instead of 0.45. I don't remember the exact amount, but I don't know how many have taken advantage of that, but it's good.
No, and I mean, to your point, you know, when talking to the Conservancy District, usually, typically outdoor landscaping in residential is up to 75%, you know, of the water use that they do. So, I mean, that's usually where you can make the biggest impact is on outdoor.
Well, in proof of that, I'm on the wastewater treatment board, and with as much growth as we've seen in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, there's been no noticeable increase in the incoming flow into the wastewater treatment plant. So most of the increased water usage, and that's because of the low-flow toilets, shower heads, all those things. So we really haven't increased a lot with interior use. It's more the exteriors.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then as you just mentioned, you know, wastewater reuse, you know, we're continuing. You know, we want to continue to support that, the treatment of the wastewater, to hopefully be able to provide it for secondary and agricultural irrigation. You know, right now they're I think just working their way through the steps, make sure everything's good, and then hopefully that can be implemented so that, again, if we can use that for agriculture irrigation, that means less, you know, groundwater pumping out of the aquifers, which would be great. So I think, again, all these different efforts, I think they build upon one another to make something that hopefully can be successful. So And then still on future development, looking at agriculture strategies. Already mentioned the different LEPA and LISA sprinklers that can, you know, reduce that water use. Again, with education and monitoring, we could co-host different workshops with the Conservancy District. And then, of course, there's also what they call the AMI metering, the advanced metering infrastructure, which gives real-time data. So rather than having to just kind of wait until reporting at the end of the year, you know really at any given point in time exactly, you know, the amount of water usage that's being done. So that's something that could be utilized as well. And then just, you know, staying up to date on technology and monitoring with different, you know, soil moisture sensors, weather-based controllers on irrigated lands, and then protecting all those irrigation canals that already exist, you know, to make sure that those remain in place for the long term. A couple of things to just highlight, you know, when it comes to that last fourth point of required things, you know, what's the county doing to do their part? Obviously, we've got this facility right here, you know, where there was, this just shows what it was previously, probably about, I don't know, 8 years ago or so, with all the different turf and landscaping and what it looks like today. You know, so there was a big part, you know, I think that the county's already done with this facility, currently being done at the facility in Cedar, where all the turf's being removed, all the landscaping's being redone to be more water efficient. And then also noted on here the fairgrounds, you know, there's efforts being done there as well to try and be water wise. So I think, you know, to some extent the county is trying to do their part as well to show, you know, how these things can be approved and adjusted and still be aesthetically pleasing. So, and I won't go through too much on this because it's kind of overlaps with some of the other things that we've done, just with the low flow fixtures and stuff. But as far as different subdivisions, you know, one of the things that could be done for subdivisions as a voluntary program, if anybody wanted to participate, was, you know, increase their capacity sizes. Now, some of the benefits of this could be to avoid future retrofits. You know, if the subdivision starts getting additional guest homes or accessory dwelling units, if it's at a size at a higher capacity, there's lower pressure in the pipes, which, you know, could prevent leaks if it's not at such a high pressure. And then, again, it helps with the monitoring of it if you have that additional capacity. And then, you know, we could even do like an Iron County WaterWise certified, you know, badge type program so that people, again, a lot of times they like to utilize those in the marketing of the development to show how they're trying to do their part as well. So that's something that could happen. A couple different zoning overlay ideas that were identified. So in talking with the Water Conservancy District, we talked about, are there areas in the county that we want to protect because they're very good natural recharge areas? You know, we'd hate to see a natural recharge area, especially with all the efforts that we've done thus far with recharge, to, you know, develop over that, and then all of a sudden it's makes it a little more challenging to recharge. So looking at even identifying those areas so that they're known, so that we can maybe place some things over those areas to protect them. And then along those same lines, identify any of the existing fissures, you know, that we have, you know, to note that those are potential hazard areas. Obviously, there's development that has begun, you know, around Enoch with the fissures where it began and then ended quite abruptly due to the fissures. So we'd hate to see, you know, more of that. So I think identify where those are and have them mapped is what we're looking at. So one quick thing that I'll highlight here that's in the draft, we talk a little bit about the preservation efforts. And so we just wanted to highlight House Bill 237. The rollback tax, previously it was capped at us being able to utilize 20% of those. That was recently changed so that we could utilize 100% of those rollback taxes towards basically conservation easements for agriculture. And I've got some red lines there. Those are red lines basically because we made those, that minor change after Planning Commission. So just wanted to highlight that here. That in addition to not just conservation easements, but, you know, we believe that those funds could also be used toward acquiring water rights, you know, whether they be standalone or, you know, with the land itself. You know, we believe that there'd be no issue of using that to be able to have water rights as well, not just preservation of the land, but, of course, you can have the land, great. But you really, depending on the type of, you know, agriculture you're doing, you're going to need water rights to accompany and be with that. So we wanted to just make that point there that we want that to be able to be included as part of it. So anything else you wanted to mention on that, Reed?
Brett, before you step, I wanted to bring, so we had a state water meeting not long ago to talk about ways to, I think one of the lowest hanging fruits, and I'm not sure where we've been, Reed, maybe you can weigh in on this. We've talked about it, but on when I built my home about 30 years ago, I put one of these hot water circulation pumps on it. I don't know if you've done that on your home, Reed, but it's...
I don't recommend it if you're going to do on-demand.
On-demand.
They don't really work for on-demand.
Oh, on-demand. Okay. We have water heaters, so we... But I just... I mean, I can turn on our shower or faucet in the kitchen, and you wait maybe 10 or 15 seconds before you have hot water. I've been in places where you wait 2 or 3 minutes. And to me, that's... If we could incentivize new construction to... If they, I didn't know about that, but if they do have water heaters versus the tankless water heaters, if you could incentivize that, I think that would be a huge savings in water because people, you know, they turn on the shower and let it run for 2 minutes before hot water comes, and then you waste a lot of water.
Right.
So I would like to see us, and this is a county, figure out a way to incentivize that or somehow. So.
Water Conservancy District to do that since they're the ones making the connection and have the ability to incentivize.
So anyway, go ahead.
What I wanted to visit about is just a little bit about the what I would call preservation water. I've been proposing for several years the a way to fund acquisition of water to preserve it for agriculture. And I've talked to the state engineer, I've talked to the Conservancy District, tried to float this idea that we can buy a conservation easement on water, essentially. And I think we've talked about it as a commission, tried a few years ago to get some funding for that, and we didn't have any. But now there's a funding stream that could be used for that. So I think we need to work on a program in the county that can buy water, essentially preserve water for agriculture by buying off the development rights off of water, just like we do land when we do a conservation easement on land. So you're familiar with doing conservation easements on land. You value the land for what it would be worth to take the development rights away from the land. So you separate those rights off and sell those. And a conservation easement purchases that development right. Well, there's an opportunity. Nobody does this right now. I've researched significantly and asked people, and nobody's done this, but I think that we could, and the state engineer believes that we could, and I've talked to a couple of water attorneys who see no reason why we couldn't do this, and that is to compensate the owners of a water right for the development right of that water so that it could then only be used for agriculture. As I've thought over the years of ways that we can preserve agriculture in Iron County so that we don't turn into Washington County where all of the agriculture is gone because all of the water is used for development, water is really going to be the thing that will allow agriculture to continue. Because I know that a lot of farmers, there's more value in the water than there is the land. And so that's their investment, and they can sell that off at any time. And if we were in a position to purchase the development right from the water to compensate for not selling that water for development and compensate that owner, we could then, that water could be preserved for agriculture. That would be its only use. It wouldn't be able to be used for development, and it wouldn't be able to be converted to M&I. It wouldn't be able to be used for anything else except agriculture. That would do two things. It would allow the continuation of agriculture, and it would allow a cheaper value to purchase water for people who want to use it for agriculture. So even if somebody's going to retire, they want to sell their land, they want to sell their water, and they sell off the development right of the water or to create a preservation water right, then the water has less value and could be purchased by someone or leased for purposes of agriculture at a better market rate that agriculture could afford. Agriculture cannot compete with development when it comes to paying for what it costs for water. And the reason that this, I don't think, has worked anywhere, nobody's done this, and we haven't been able to yet, is because it costs money to do that. Where does that money come from to buy water and preserve it for agriculture and pay off someone to put it in a preservation easement for agriculture? I don't want to call it conservation water like you do a conservation easement, because conservation implies we use less, and all of the conservation measures, you know, so we're calling it preservation water. But if we could preserve water for agriculture by compensating farmers and ranchers to turn that water into a preservation, they take it out of agriculture, then how do we use it to benefit agriculture, which is what we want to do? And I think that this is a great tool now in terms of breaking that out, and how that would work and who would hold the water rights and whether you have a bank and whether, you know, we own the water rights and then we lease them or sell them. The simplest way is just let the market do it. But available to spend on